Well, I have absolutely no idea where the last month has gone, but I do know that in the house now this morning is our Cambridge 105 vet, Hayley Baker from Vets for Pets. And Hayley, the last month...
flown past.
Hasn't it just? What have you been seeing in the surgeries?
So we've had a large amount of beginnings of allergic skin disease coming up because the pollen is definitely getting worse.
Yes, because we're all snivelling as well, aren't we?
Absolutely. So dogs and cats are seeing the same. A lot of itchy dogs at the moment and cats with flea allergies. So that seems to be the predominant thing going on at the moment with us.
And better treated these days than it used to be, isn't
Absolutely.
It, really?
Absolutely. I think our understanding of allergic skin disease has grown exponentially in the last 10 years, which is great. My own dog has it, and it's one of the most frustrating things to have to manage sometimes. But yeah, I think our knowledge of how to treat it, how to manage it, and how to manage people's expectations of what to expect, I think have improved, hopefully, you know, a lot over the last 10 to 15 years, which is great.
And I know a lot of people, now that the spring is here and slightly warmer weather, sort of, well, it's on and off a little bit at the moment, it's bath time for bigger dogs, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think definitely now, yeah, people are beginning to spruce their dogs up and getting them ready for the summer. And actually, we see a huge amount of allergic reactions to shampoos. If you're not using a specific dog shampoo, you use a human one, for example. I've done it on my own dog when I've run out, and it can cause them to get quite itchy.
So that's a little bit of advice. If you're thinking Absolutely. Of giving him the annual dip or the biannual dip or whatever it is, then...
make sure it's a dog shampoo, definitely.
Absolutely. And of course, swimming in rivers and things.
Yes.
That's the other thing that people will do with their dogs at this time of year to freshen them up, and not a great idea in Cambridge.
They do end up smelling quite a lot. The River Cam in particular is quite stagnant, unfortunately, at times. So, yeah, they can smell, but there are things that they can pick up in there as well. And we see some vomiting and diarrhea bugs after they've been swimming. And it also, if they get water in their ears, will make them more likely to pick up ear infections. So we definitely see swimming dogs are more prone to getting ear infections and problems like that, just because the dirty water is physically getting into that ear canal, getting stuck and then brewing a nice bacteria.
Oh, lovely. Good stuff. Okay, so a little bit of words of warning there if you're freshening up your pooches at this time of year. One of the things that we're going to talk about today is heart murmurs, Hayley. Having been the owner of sort of three long-haired and lovely, that they became quite elderly cats in their time, every one of them was diagnosed when I adopted them as having a heart murmur. Mm-hmm. First time anyone said that to me, I went, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now? And, you know, the prognosis is going to be terrible. But actually, I have learned that that's a nonsense. Certainly I've been lucky in the cases that I've had with my own animals. Yeah. But what is a heart murmur?
So all a heart murmur means is that there's an abnormal noise when we're listening to the heart, and it can be caused either by turbulence of the blood, so the blood is being pushed around the heart abnormally and it makes this kind of whooshing noise, so you hear this kind of whoosh whoosh noise. I'm not sure how well that noise comes over on the radio, but
I should have brought Molly Bloom in and put her chest up against the microphone.
You would have been able to hear it very clearly there, bless her. So that is the main one, that you hear turbulence in the heart, and that's a sign that there's something not quite right going on in there. But also sometimes you can hear a squeak sometimes, and that's if there's a bit of a narrowing and the blood's having to be pushed through faster, you get this kind of squeaky noise. So a heart murmur just means basically that we can hear something not quite right in there, and often we need to then try and figure out, is this anything to worry about or not?
And is it sort of prevalent more in elderly animals, or can young, very young animals have
Absolutely.
It too?
So we see it in two different populations. So we either see them in the very, very young animals, so when they're brought in for their 8-9 week health check, when they're getting their primary vaccinations done, we'll see a significant proportion of animals that have a little heart murmur then. And in a lot of them, they'll grow out of it by kind of 4, 5, 6 months of age. So again, it's not a big panic if you're
your puppy or your kitten.
It depends how severe it sounds or what it's sounding like, or how the puppy or kitten is. You know, if they're a nice, healthy size, they're the same as their littermates, they're growing really well, we'll recheck them when they're back in for their second vaccine 3-4 weeks later. And often we'll find that most of them have disappeared by that point. So generally, most of them go away, which is brilliant. And then we have the second population, which is the older animals. But they can start developing at any age, 4, 5, 6 sometimes in cats. But generally 10, 11, 12 is when we start beginning to pick them up in the cats.
So what about dogs then? Because we've discussed several times on this programme that although we sort of lump them all together, dogs and cats are actually quite different in some of the medications and indeed in some of the symptoms that they give off. So dogs and heart murmurs?
Absolutely. So one of the sayings we used to have at vet school was that cats are not little dogs. And this is one of these conditions where absolutely you have to completely have different sets of rules for cats and for dogs. So dogs generally, when you pick up heart murmurs when they're a bit older, there is a significant reason for them. So you tend to very rarely pick up heart murmurs that aren't causing a problem in dogs. But it generally means less dogs have heart murmurs than cats, for example.
Because there is a congenital heart condition there.
So either a congenital or they've developed one over a period of time. Particularly the prime example is the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, who just starts coughing a little bit at night and doesn't want to walk quite enough. They're very prone to getting valves that almost fold in on themselves is the best way to describe it, and that can lead to quite significant problems. So
blood's not getting around the body?
Exactly. So the heart just physically can't pump enough blood forward because the valve isn't working, so blood is going backwards and forwards, so their output isn't as good as it should be. So yes, it's certainly a syndrome where we treat cats and dogs as completely separate species and manage them completely differently.
So let's look at the treatment first of all for a cat with a heart murmur. If you deem it as being sort of a bit noisy and not doing what you'd like it to do.
Absolutely. So cats are really frustrating because you will get a lot of cats brought in just for routine vaccinations and you will pick up this murmur there. And it's then down to you to try and figure out whether it's significant or not. And actually, in the vast majority of cases, cats will have this murmur and it can be caused either by a slight thickening in the heart. That's the most common reason. But it's not actually causing a problem. We're not in heart failure. We're not seeing any clinical signs associated with it.
What other signs should we have with that us worry?
In cats, the things you tend to notice that their breathing rate goes up or that they just start panting or have laboured breathing. They will have exercise intolerance. They won't want to run around as much. But cats can be really difficult to suss out whether they have exercise intolerance.
Well, they love a lie down, don't they?
Absolutely. And you're not seeing them run around outside the entire time. So it can be difficult to pick that up. So often what I say to people is keep an eye on their breathing rate at home. And if you measure how many breaths they're taking in a minute and you're finding over a period of a couple of months that that's going up, then we need to be looking into this. The other thing that we can find is that they'll just have a very gradual weight loss. So just very, very slowly lose a little bit of weight over a period of 3 to 6 months. And it's just because the heart is then beginning to put a bit of a strain on the system. They're burning up more calories. So with cats, that's what we tend to see. But in the vast majority of heart murmurs that we pick up, the good news is that we'll pick them up, but it will never progress to the point where it actually needs treatment. So it can be quite difficult sometimes for us to communicate that to owners and say, you know, yes, we've got a heart murmur. In human medicine with dogs, you know, we do worry about it and we want to get to the bottom of what's going on. But with cats, as long as the cat is clinically looking very well, it's in the consult room and it's not panting, it's not breathing fast, we can say, okay, you know, we can keep an eye on this cat, see you back in a few months, let's see how we're getting on at that point and have you noticed any changes at home, have we had any weight loss, and go from there. So it is a slightly different way of looking at medicine in comparison to how you would treat heart murmurs in humans or in dogs.
And presumably when the cat goes into your surgery, it is going to feel a little bit of anxiety. So if anything is going to show, it ought to show at that point.
Absolutely. So that's often the time where if we find that they're kind of borderline, we will see that they may be panting in their cage, which cats should never pant. So if you see your cat panting at any point, you should always get it checked out because they're not like dogs. They shouldn't pant.
Is it always going to be about the heart or can it also be about anxiety?
So it can be anxiety sometimes that they've got themselves so worked up that they're panting. So absolutely. In a young, healthy cat, that's probably the most common reason. But it can be if they have lung disease as well, that can cause it. But heart is one of the most common reasons that we'll see that cats will start panting, especially if it's at home, for example.
If you are concerned and the symptoms that you've just sort of outlined to us, what can a vet do about that?
Yeah, so what we generally do is kind of take a two-stage approach and it really does vary from vet to vet as to what they're comfortable with doing, what they're used to doing. So the gold standard is to do an ultrasound of the heart so that you can actually see what is going on inside there. Yeah. Are there thickened muscles? Are there any dilated chambers? Are there any narrowings in valves? And try and figure it out. But some of those can be very difficult to actually pick up and referral to a specialist is then indicated. And, you know, there are fantastic specialists in this area. We're so lucky in Cambridge with the number of referral centres that we have.
And we have the vet school too, don't
absolutely.
We?
So it's absolutely brilliant from that point of view. So we utilise referral specialists quite a lot on those cases where we can't obviously see anything on an ultrasound scan, but we're just not quite happy with the cat's size or shape of the heart.
What happens at an ultrasound scan?
So basically what you have to do is you have to unfortunately clip some of the hair off the cat, because the ultrasound probe has to go straight onto the skin, make sure there's no air in the way, otherwise you won't get a good picture. And you have to lie the cat on their side, and then the ultrasound probe literally is pushed up against their chest wall, so it's not painful, it's not uncomfortable, it's just a slightly funny position for them to be lying in. And then we scan over the heart and the images come up on the screen, and we can take measurements of certain things to check, are we seeing enlargements, are we seeing thickenings, and we can see actually how the valves are working. You can use something called a Doppler, which allows you to see what direction the blood's flowing, so you can see, is there any turbulence. The other thing in cats which is really interesting, you have to check to see if there are any big blood clots inside the heart, because this is something that cats get that's a little bit of an abnormality in comparison to dogs, that they will get blood clots forming inside the heart themselves. And this often can be the first sign that you see a problem, is that this blood clot will seed off a tiny little clot and it will get stuck effectively in the blood supply to the back legs. And so someone might bring us in a cat and say, oh, it's been hit by a car because it can't walk on its back legs. But actually it's got something called an aortic thromboembolism, which is a blood clot just in the back legs, and it stops the blood flow. And that is often a sign of quite severe heart disease. Yeah. So this is where it's really important that you always perform a very thorough clinical exam and have a really good check of everywhere, and not just focus on the immediate signs that we're seeing, which is that they can't walk on their back legs.
And then what can be done?
So there are a couple of things for cats with heart disease. So one of them is that you put them on anticoagulants to try and stop this clot from building up. The next kind of mainstay of treatment is diuretics, which basically means it draws fluid from the body and excretes it, because one of the biggest side effects we see with cats is that they get fluid building up actually around the lungs rather than inside the lungs like you do with humans and dogs. And that compresses the lungs so they can't breathe
properly. So in the
properly.
Chest cavity?
Exactly. So in between the chest wall and the lungs itself, it's called a pleural effusion, and it compresses the lungs down so they just can't physically inflate them enough so they can't breathe.
It squeezes everything.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really, really must be very uncomfortable for them. So we'll drain that fluid if we see it.
And but is then, a cat wheezing at this stage?
So they won't necessarily wheeze, but what you'll find is that it might look like they're actually using their tummy to breathe. Rather than just seeing their chest wall going up and down, you'll see their tummy moving as well.
To compensate. Because,
exactly. They're trying really hard to expand this chest cavity, and they just can't do it because of all of the fluid in there.
So it's like when someone gets a punctured lung and all the fluid builds up around it and squashes the lung into nothing.
Exactly. So. Same sort of thing. So we treat that as an emergency and we remove the fluid straight away. Frustratingly with cats, and this is an area of huge research at the moment in veterinary medicine, other than that, the rest of the medications, there are several things that we can try to slow the heart rate down, because cats often get really, really fast heart rates with these conditions, or that we try and allow the heart to have less resistance to pump again. But the data is a bit inequivocal at the moment. We're not entirely sure what ones are making huge benefits or not. So it's an area of big research right now to try and find out more, like we know in dogs, like we know in humans. But certainly that's my kind of first day of treatment, is get them on diuretics to get rid of this fluid that's there, try and make sure we don't get any clots building up, because that's one of the things that can cause the big side effects. And then if we're not seeing improvement from there, then we look at further medication kind of going forward.
So preventing those clots, does that become, in a very elderly animal, does that become a sort of a basic sort of requirement?
So it is something that I think we're finding we're using more and more, especially as more cats are living longer, there's more chance that they're going to build up clots if they've got this turbulence, this abnormal movement of the blood. That's what's causing the clots from building up. So we are seeing more and more that we're considering starting cats, once we've done an ultrasound and we've seen what's going on in there and we know it's appropriate, we are starting them on these anticoagulants to try and prevent this build up if there isn't one there already.
Is this treatment expensive?
So the actual medication itself is one that I would consider in kind of the mid-range, I suppose, of long-term medication. So it is definitely, hopefully, not going to break the bank and something that should be accessible to everyone. The anticoagulants can be slightly more expensive, but there are hopefully more generic versions of them coming out now, which then makes it cheaper to use. So it is one that the ultrasound and the blood pressure monitoring, and we have to do blood tests sometimes, that can add up a little bit, but the medication monthly actually is one of the more reasonable ones that we use.
So it does successfully prolong life?
Absolutely. So we do see a significant increase in their life expectancy if we can treat them at the right time. If the cat isn't in heart failure, if it's not showing signs of proper dysfunction of the heart, it's been shown there's no point in putting them on medication. So it's really important that we catch them at the right time, which is why we advise generally, if we've got a cat with a heart murmur, 3 to 6 monthly checkups rather than yearly checkups. So we can just keep an eye, make sure we're not seeing this breathing rate going up, we're not hearing any abnormal sounds in the lungs.
Well, we have plenty of pointers there for keeping an eye on our cats to work that one out. Hayley Baker talking about heart murmurs in our pussycats, and joined at the moment by our Cambridge 105 vet, Hayley Baker. We've been talking, Hayley, about heart murmurs and more especially in pussycats this morning. But I know that all our dog lovers are waiting to find out about their particular choice of animal. And we've said that it's a very different matter in dogs and cats. So a bit more serious in dogs?
So we tend to find when you pick up a murmur in dogs that it's more likely that it's going to cause a problem in the long run. So again, you can still get these cases where you pick up a murmur, but actually it's not causing a specific problem at that point. So again, we kind of sit on it and keep a very close eye on the dog and wait. But generally, I found there was a statistic from one of the Heart Foundations that about 15% of dogs in the UK are actually affected by heart disease, which is really quite a high amount. And that certainly fits what we see coming through the doors in the practice, that we do have a lot of dogs that are on medication long term to try and control these heart symptoms.
So what can be done about it as far as they're concerned? And are we looking at the same sort of symptoms as in cats? Heavy breathing, panting? Because dogs pant, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the classic thing that we see in dogs is that they start coughing. So we get a lot of people coming in that unfortunately think that their dog has just picked up a bit of kennel cough, or an upper respiratory infection. And unfortunately, it then turns out to be because of the heart, because when the heart gets enlarged, it actually pushes on the windpipe and it can cause them to cough, and they can get a bit of fluid in their lungs that also causes the coughing. So with dogs, it tends to be that the classic one is that the owner comes in, says their dog has been coughing a little bit, hasn't enjoyed their walks as much, maybe isn't chasing after the ball. Sometimes they'll think that maybe it's because of arthritis, they're just slowing down a little bit. And those are the two main ones that we really see. Worst case scenario, you see them coming in and their gums are a little bit blue sometimes, and that's because the blood's just not being able to circulate around properly. But generally, there are a lot of signs before we get to that point, and owners will generally bring them in then.
So what can we do about it long term?
So long term with dogs, if it is one of a couple of conditions that dogs are very prone to getting, so not something that they've been born with, we generally try and manage these with medications. And the way that we manage it is same as with cats with the diuretics. So we want to get rid of this excess fluid that's building up because the heart can't pump it out quick enough. And that's a diuretic that we will use. And sometimes we have to use multiple diuretics, different types acting on different areas of the kidneys to try and help them excrete more of the fluid.
So sort of a mixture and combination.
Absolutely. So we'll often start them on one or two, but as things progress, we have to add in more and more. So that's one thing we try and stop the fluid from building up. We also then want to try and allow the heart to beat against as least resistance as possible. So we use something to dilate the blood vessels on the way out of the heart.
So they have clear passage.
Exactly. Yeah. So it makes it easier for the heart if it's a bit weakened or it's struggling to get the fluid out, make it a bit easier to move out. But also with heart failure, it affects quite a lot of hormones in the dog's system, and these hormones can act on the kidneys to do the opposite of what we want and make them retain fluid. So we give them medication to try and stop this hormone, stop the kidneys retaining fluid, because we want them to do the exact opposite and get rid of this extra fluid that's building up. So that's generally the mainstay. If we have dogs that have arrhythmias though, which mean that the heart is beating in an abnormal pattern, we sometimes use something like beta blockers, for example, to try and control those, but slightly more rarely than we would do in humans, for example.
I was going to say, a lot of people are probably recognising some of the things you're talking about from their own conditions.
Absolutely.
Really.
And that's how all veterinary medicine starts out, is that more human research has been done. And although dogs and cats aren't humans, we definitely look at what is done in human medicine and see whether it is applicable in animals. And then we progress things from there. So absolutely, most of the drugs will have started out in some form or other as human medications, and then we try and find similars or differences in animals and then tailor our drugs going forward. So we do have dog specific licensed heart medications, but we also do use some human medications as well if there isn't a dog specific one available.
You keep mentioning the words heart failure. If you have an emergency at home with your dog, what would you do? I mean, if a dog actually... I mean, I sort of know what it's like to have a cat and have a heart attack. Sadly, that was it wasn't a very good outcome as far as that was concerned for me. And I just felt at that point there was nothing I could do because the cat was ill anyway. But as far as dogs and things are concerned, I mean, if you've got a human being that's you might be having a heart attack... A lot of us know how to proceed there. What about your animal at home?
So with dogs, unfortunately, generally, if it gets to the point where they have a heart attack, so literally the heart stops beating as it should do, the only thing that you can do from home is get them down to a vet as soon as possible. There isn't really anything that you can do to try and start the heart or try and control it. You can try, but to be honest, if the dog has got to that stage, it will need more intervention to try and control it. But unfortunately, in the vast majority of cases, when a dog does have what we consider a kind of heart attack, that it's not good, unfortunately, and there's not a huge amount, even in the vet's practice, that we can really do from there, because it generally means the heart has got to the end point of its life. Mm. It can't function anymore, and we can't do as much in humans as we wish, heart transplants and things like that.
So preventative is the answer, looking
Absolutely.
For early signs.
Early diagnosis is the single most important thing for the outcome of the dog. Again, it's the same thing with cats. There is no significant benefit to treating them prior to heart failure coming on. There is some more evidence coming out that there might be a couple of things that might help earlier on. But as soon as a dog goes into what we consider heart failure, so that just means basically the blood that's coming out of the heart isn't enough to be able to keep the dog functioning normally, then it really is a significant benefit going forward.
And resuscitation in cats, possible?
It's possible, and we have to do that in the practice at times. But again, unfortunately, if it's got to that point at home where your cat's heart stops working, it's very unlikely, even if you did get it beating again, that there's going to be a good long-term outcome, unfortunately.
What about the knock-on effect? You mentioned kidneys. With the other organs, if your animal has been diagnosed with a heart murmur and it has gone to that next stage where you as a vet are concerned and are starting to do medication, what about the sort of output as far as kidneys and liver and all of that is concerned?
Absolutely.
I mean, we've mentioned lungs, obviously.
Yeah, and you're spot on there. You know, it affects all of the organs and all of the problems. So the kidneys actually are the one that we monitor the closest because they take a bit of a battering, mostly because, as you say, there's potential for this low blood pressure because you've got low output. And if the kidneys don't get a good blood pressure to them the whole time, it can damage them. But also the medications that we're using are acting directly on the kidneys. So we're kind of hitting it twice, in the sense that the heart isn't working as well as it should be, so the kidneys aren't getting the blood that they need, and then we're asking them to work harder to get rid of the blood. So we do monitor the kidneys very closely and tailor the medications based on what we're seeing on regular blood checks with the kidneys. Same thing with the liver. What can happen is if the fluid isn't getting pumped out of the heart properly, it dams up backwards, and one of the places it dams into is the liver. So the liver can actually get congested and can get edema in it, which is fluid that builds up in there. And that can just cause ongoing damage to it as well. And
what sort of signs would your animal show for that?
So you may not see a huge amount of signs, to be honest, clinically in the animal, but it's something that we may pick up on routine blood screens, that we'll see an increase
in testing liver urine, presumably.
Exactly. Mm. You know, we might see that there's a raised protein level, which could be an indication that the kidneys have got damaged and got a bit leaky, or that the urine is very, very dilute, and that can be a sign that there's something going on. So we will often just keep an eye on the organs and make sure we're not seeing significant problems there as well.
I'm hearing everyone going, oh, so how do I take a urine sample from my cat? As I well know how to
Indeed.
Do that. There are ways and means. Perhaps you'd tell us.
Absolutely. So there are several options. The one that we try and encourage is that you try and do it at home. Now, this isn't as scary as it sounds, I promise. What we generally advise is actually shut your cat in a room overnight, and we can provide non-absorbent cat litter. So it's these tiny little beads that you put in your cat tray. The cat thinks it's normal cat litter. They have a wee, but because it's non-absorbent, the urine just sits in there. And then we provide you, if we're nice, with gloves and a little pipette and syringe.
And it's very simple.
You can then just pick it up and then you can drop that down to your vet. The other option is that you can always bring them down to your vet, and your vet will be able to get a urine sample, either by just squeezing the bladder a little bit, and sometimes they'll wee for us. Sometimes we have have to do something called a cystocentesis, which is a bit of a mouthful, which is where we put a small needle into the bladder and draw a sample. And that is the gold standard of urine sample, because it means it's not going to be contaminated by the outflow, and it's fresh, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm thinking male dogs here. How on earth do we proceed with that?
So with that, we generally run around outside with the dogs with a nurse and a kidney dish and wait for them to go and scent mark something and try and grab something underneath. So if you ever walk past Balmoral Road, you often see us running around
with a tin can.
Exactly, trying to catch this urine. So actually, the male dogs are probably the easiest of all of them to catch, because they do tend to cock their legs, so it's easy to get a dish underneath.
And because they're not used to litter trays. So
no, exactly.
You show them a litter tray and they'll be looking at you completely gone out one way or another.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Our time is up. I don't know where it's all gone to. I mean, that's heart murmurs for this month. We wish you well in all the things that are thrown at you over the next month.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to your visit next month. And Molly can switch the radio off now. She promised me that if you said the word geriatric, she was going to turn off. So you haven't said it. I have, but I've also told her that you're now going away again. No doubt she'll see you before the month is out.
That would be lovely.
As always, we thank you for all your wisdom and thoughts about all our animals and things. And no doubt we shall have lots of brand new topics next month.
Thank you for having me.
Hayley Baker there from Vets for Pets, our Cambridge 105 vet. You will find her in Barnwell Road. And don't forget, there's also a branch of Vets for Pets and the, what are they calling it now?
Beehive
Centre. That's
yes.
Right. Everything changes. I've been here far too long. That's the problem there. But take along your pets. If you're the slightest bit worried, just remember one of the lessons that we've learnt from Hayley's visit today is that symptoms are everything. And if suddenly your nearest and dearest pussycat or dog or whatever is not behaving normally, that is always the sign that perhaps something is amiss, and prevention is everything. So let's keep our fingers crossed that all your pets have a very good, healthy month.